Hey Dan, guess what? I'm fulfilling our bet. This is the podcast that I needed to do, and it's going to be on Supercoach, the 2017 season. So here we go. I need Metro Boomin want some more. Cause I got a really big team, and they need some really big rings. They need some really nice things. Better be coming with no strings. Better be coming with no strings. We need some really nice things. We need some really big rings. I got a really big team. And I'd like to thank everybody who's listening, all two of you. I really appreciate it. I don't think we'll do any more of these, but we'll see. If enough people listen, we might. What we want to do here is talk about a few things that aren't maybe mentioned in other podcasts. I want to bring up some things that to help you guys think about your teams, maybe some pods, maybe some traps that you should avoid, and we might talk a little bit about the draw as well. Now, in terms of pods, I have had a mixed history of selecting pods for round one over the years. I've had some successes. Brenton Lawrence was a memorable one back in, I think, 2013 it was, when he came down from the Titans after averaging about 3 seconds a game. And he basically became a starting prop at Manly and made me a lot of money. I've had some failures as well. The year that Tohu got his 80-minute start at the Storm, I thought Proctor was going to be the 80-minute guy. And I bought Proctor instead and sold him a couple of weeks later. There was also the year that I got Maurice Blair into my team after he went to the Titans and was running outside. I think it was Albert Kelly after he had left the Storm. That didn't pan out too well either. I have been a little bit better at picking backs. I started with Croker and Turbo last year, and I remember my back line pretty much remained near unchanged, at least the starting back line, for the first 8 or 9 weeks of the year. Alright then, we're going to talk about five players who nobody seems to be talking about. They've got pretty low ownership, and I like them a lot, and I don't know why they're not coming up in discussion on the forums or otherwise. So let's look at these five players. Okay, so the first player we're going to look at is Kevin Proctor from the Gold Coast Titans. So he's moved across from the Storm in the off-season. He looks to be playing probably the right edge position, which is the same as he played at the Storm, which means McQueen will probably be playing on the left. Now, he's also been named co-captain along with Ryan James, which was something that was maybe a little bit unexpected considering he's a new recruit to the team, but he's got a lot of experience. He comes out of the Storm system, and he's a decent player, and in 2016, he actually averaged 61 and was a near keeper. Now, besides that, he also averaged 70 minutes last year for that 61 points, and Neil Henry has come out and said that Proctor is going to be playing 80 minutes per game this year. So hopefully, if he can maintain his PPM, he's going to see a bigger increase in points that might get him up around that 65, 66, 67 average, which then becomes some real gun conversation kind of numbers. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, well, yeah, but he was in the Storm last year and he scored a bunch of tries and, you know, you can't expect that to be repeated at the Titans. But I actually think you can. So the Titans actually score a decent amount of tries through their forwards, which is unusual. So last year, Chris McQueen actually scored 7 tries playing on the edge for the Titans. On the other side, Zeb Taya scored 5 tries. Now, Proctor actually only scored 6 tries. So to expect that to be repeated this year with him playing 80 minutes a game, I don't think is too much to ask. And at least from an attacking stats point of view, I don't expect his output to drop off too much. I think if there's anything that's going to be a concern in terms of choosing Proctor, the first thing would be that he's had a bit of an injury-plagued off-season, and he's going to be coming into the round one team with maybe not as much preparation as he would have liked. The second concern might be that a lot of players, and this is true for forwards, that depart from the Storm seem to not be the same player. Their output drops. Ryan Hoffman's a pretty good example. But I think Proctor, he's only 27. He's coming into, as I said, a co-captaincy situation. He's going to be playing 80 minutes a game. His PPM doesn't seem to drop off too much with an increase in minutes. So I think if you're looking for a safe, reliable pick, somebody who probably won't drop too far below 400 grand, I don't think, and in fact might increase on that, I think Kevin Proctor is a great pick. And he only has 3.1% ownership. So he's, for a player of his price, he's really flying under the radar, and I think he might be in my team round one. The second guy you want to consider in your team possibly is David Fusatua of the Warriors. He's had a few injury-plagued seasons. He hasn't really played a full season for a while until last year when he started in, I think it was round 7, and played his way through to the end of the season. So the thing about Fusatua is, first of all, he's expected to move into the right center position ahead of Blake Ashford, which means he's just to the right of Sean Johnson, and he's playing that position that Coney Hurrell played in for a few years. Bodine Thompson would also be down that right side, but he's injured at the moment, and we'll have to wait and see if he'll be fit for round one. But yeah, Fusatua is a talent. The only issue with him in the past has been his fitness, really. He gets the tackle breaks, he gets the tries, he's very fast. And I expect if he can remain healthy for 2017, and let's hope he does, he'll be in the conversation as one of the better centers going around. He only has 1.1% ownership, so still, you know, very much a pod. And yeah, get him into your teams if you like a little bit of spice. Okay, the third guy I want to talk about on this list is a former Parramatta Eel who I used to think of as one of the classiest players in the NRL. He just was totally underrated, did everything, and then went off to England for a couple of years before now returning. And of course, I'm talking about Kenny Seo. Now, Seo has landed with the Knights. He's going to take Uarte's old position probably on the right wing, which means he'll be playing outside Gagai. And I know what the first concern about his game is going to be, and that's that he plays for the Knights. Now, he's priced on his Super League scores, and he's actually come from Hull Kingston Rovers, who are kind of the Knights of the Super League. They actually got relegated this last past season. So if you're worried about his price not being reflective of him playing in a bad team, it is, and that doesn't really worry me too much about him going to the Knights. Now, his price of $260,000 odd is not cheap, but I think we'll get some improvement out of the Knights. I think most of the attack will go down their right-hand side of the field, and I actually do expect him to improve on that price a fair bit, and I wouldn't be surprised if he settled around the $33,000-$40,000 mark. He is one for the true believers, admittedly, but actually he has 0.9% ownership, which is a lot higher than I would have expected. But I guess he's a player that some super coaches would remember from previous years at the Eels, and maybe because of that recognition, he's making his way into their teams for the moment. But I think he might be a flyer, and I will be considering him for round one. Okay, now let's go to the shores of Manly Beach and talk about Adan Fanua-Blake. Big prop. Played a few games for Manly last year after coming across from the Dragons. He He has a really good PPM, works really hard, actually scored 2 tries last year against the Cowboys. So he does like the white line. And the reason I like him is, well, first of all, I think he plays a little bit like a young Fifita. Is a little bit more creative in his ball play, has good footwork. And more importantly, the main thing that's drawing me to him is his position in that front row rotation. So he has, you would think, Nate Miles and Brenton Lawrence ahead of him. Now, Nate Miles, who was rubbish last year, is 35 years old now. And Brenton Lawrence, who was injured, is 32. He's back healthy now, however. The other people to talk about in that front row rotation are Lloyd Perrott, who I believe would be behind Fanua Blake, and of course Darcy Lusick, who's out injured until I believe about round 6. Now, this is being recorded before we get the team list, but I believe, or I expect, that Fanua Blake might actually get a starting position in the front row for Manly. And if he does, I think he'll play 45, perhaps even 50 minutes. He's young, but he's not too young. And the other props we mentioned that are ahead of him are old and weary. He only averaged 28 minutes a game last year. So if he does, increase that by 20 minutes or more per game, at least until Lusick gets back, I think he's actually in for a big increase in price. Fanua Blake has only 0.8% ownership, so he will be a mad pod if you start with him, and he does maintain a starting position in that front row. Okay, and the last guy I want to talk about is Tane Milne from the St. George Illawarra Dragons. Now, I think he came on off the bench for his first ever game. Then he played 4 80-minute games, and then he had an injury game, and then he played one more for an average of 71 minutes. Now, that's not the only thing. I mean, you'd expect him to now become an 80-minute player, barring injury. So there's a bit of uptick in time on the field there. But the other thing with him is that he only actually ever managed to play 7 games. So he's been discounted as well. So you have his reduced minutes that he played and his discount in price for only having played 7 games. The other thing about him is that he's actually a bit of a base stats and tackle breaks monster. Gets very, very good stats. His base stat average was about 35 points a game last year, which is excellent for a center. In terms of attacking stats, he only had the 1 try assist last year, so there's definite upside there. I mean, everyone says the Dragons don't score many points. Fine, but you should see at least marginal improvement from him in that front as well. So that's my 5 guys that nobody seems to be talking about that I think are worth at least a look if you're looking for pods for your team. And if you've listened this far, I'm just going to throw one more name out there just for a bit of I told you so, because I think this player is going to come back and make a real impression on the game. Might be this year's Jordan Rapana. I'm talking about DWZ, Dallin Watene-Zelezniak, out at the Panthers. Keep an eye on him. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the draw and also about that age-old selection question. Do I get Jonathan Thurston or do I get Sean Johnson? A lot of people are going with SJ, and for good reason. He is expected to get the kicking back in full. And a lot of people are talking about the Warriors' draw leading up to the first big bye round, round 12, in which they actually play. The Warriors' seemingly favourable draw is based not on the fact that they're playing particularly easy teams, although teams that they're playing aren't too hard or too easy. It's more so that they seem to have a lot of home games over that stretch. But if we actually look at the games that the Cowboys are playing between rounds 1 and 11, I think you'll find that they have a much easier run up until the first big bye than the Warriors do. So the Cowboys' draw looks like this. They've got the Raiders at home, Broncos away, Manly at home, Titans away, Bunnies at home, Tigers at home, Dragons away, Knights at home, Eels at home, Dogs away, Sharks away. I think people are getting drawn in by the fact that the Warriors play the first big bye round and they can play SJ through to till at least round 14. But I think Thurston does have a better run. I'm probably starting with Thurston over Johnson. I think his points are also more consistent as well. The two are about the same price, but JT does seem to score a little bit more consistently. So yeah, a lot of people will be running JT at halfback and Hayne at either 5/8 or fullback. So I just had a look at the draw leading up to the first big bye and which rounds were going to be difficult for both the Titans and the Cowboys. And the rounds that I found affected them the most was round 4, where actually the two teams play each other. The Titans play in Townsville. And round 10 was quite a difficult one as well. The Cowboys play the Dogs away and the Titans play the Storm down in Melbourne. Now, in those two rounds, I think you're, at least those two players, JT, Hayne, and any other Titans or Cowboys attacking players you might have, will probably score a little bit less than they would in other weeks leading up to round 12. However, in those two rounds, there is actually one team that has some easier games, and that's the Panthers. And the Panthers in round 4 will be playing the Knights. They're at home to the Knights. And in round 10, the Panthers are home to the Warriors. I think if you are going to go down the JT and Hayne route, and you are one of the people like me that do look at matchups, especially when selecting attacking players for your team, I would be getting in a Panthers player to cover rounds 4 and 10 specifically. Now, the Panthers themselves have a very, very easy run leading up to the byes, so getting Panthers players in anyway is a good idea. But if you are going with JT, along with Hayne and any other Titans attacking players, I think you can bolster the consistency of your backline by also having a Panthers player in there somewhere if you can, or maybe Cardi up in the forwards as well. Well, actually, talking about Cardi, I think it's time that we talk about some traps that people seem to be selecting in their teams. So, with no further ado, I hope you like that. It sure took me back. But yeah, Cardi. So he's the first of the players that I consider to be a trap. He played both in the back row and at 5/8 last year. He played basically the second half of the season from the 5/8 position. And while he was a 5/8, he averaged 11 or 12 points per game more than he did while he was playing in the back row in the first half of the season. Now, he's going back to the back row with the return of Tamir Martin to that 5/8 position. So why are people expecting that he'll be able to keep his price and average at what it currently is? On top of that, he moves back to a stacked pack at the Panthers, where whilst I anticipate he probably will get 80 minutes a game, it's not certain, and if he gets anything less than his 80 minutes a game in the back row, then he's really going to fall off a cliff price-wise. I do understand people getting on him because of the Panthers' early run in the season or their early draw. But again, it's been discussed widely. They've got a lot of ball players, a lot of playmakers. They've got him, they've got Moylan, they've got Cleary, they've got Martin, and they got some very handy backs as well who like to play the ball as well. So I'm worried that he's not going to get the attacking stats that he needs. He misses a lot of tackles. If he's playing a little bit tighter, he might miss more than he was when he was playing at 5'8". I don't see the upside here, and I find it even very difficult to see the maintenance at the average that he was able to get in 2016. Okay, and obviously if I think Cardi is a trap, I also think Merrin is a trap, at least in the early season. If particularly there's some hot weather games, I think he's going to be playing fewer minutes than he would average throughout the season. So I definitely would not start with him. My other obvious concern with Merrin is again with minutes. They do have a great pack with Cardi moving back to the back row. Him and Isaac Yeo on the edges should get close to 80 minutes each. Leaves Merrin with maybe 60 at lock, maybe 50, maybe 55. Who knows? And then perhaps Fisher Harris or somebody else replacing him for a stint as well. But I don't see the upside in Merrin. I think he may maintain his price, but there's more reliable players to be picked, even at the gun price range, that I would take first. So I'm not gonna go down that path with either Cardi or Merrin. Now the other two players that I want to talk about, kind of in the same vein as the Cardi and Merrin situation, Paul Vaughan and JDB at the Dragons. I'll say first and foremost that if Cam McInnes does end up playing 80 minutes per game, then I think Vaughan and JDB are probably a no-go. It depends a lot on what happens with the utility on the bench and whether they use that position as they've kind of hinted at by playing perhaps Field off the bench to replace McCrone, who would then move to hooker. In that kind of situation, there you could make the argument for both JDB and Vaughan being in your team, or just one of them. However, if that utility role is taken up by someone like Jake Marchetto, who can play in the forwards as well as replacing hooker, then my concern would be that the minutes are not there, and I wouldn't even look at JDB or Paul Vaughan. I do have to admit that I had Paul Vaughan in my team for the last month or so, but recently, after looking a little bit more into the potential minutes that I expect he'll play, I've got cold feet as a result. I figured that Vaughan would just go straight in and take Cooper's minutes, which were over 50. I think they were 54, which would be an 11-minute increase on his average from Canberra from last year. But that's assuming that there will be some injuries in the Dragons pack. And I think Cooper's minutes were increased last year as a result of that. Nobody was really fit all the way throughout the year. Everybody had some sort of niggling injury and was out for a game here or there. So if we do look at the forwards minutes, it doesn't really matter who starts, but let's assume it's Russell Packer and Leeson Armau. I'd put those two at 40 minutes each, which I think is pretty fair. And then in the back row, we've got Frizzell. Let's give him 65 minutes for the moment, although of course he can play 80 and is an Origin player. Let's give Thompson 80 minutes on the other edge. That's what he usually plays. Let's go give JDB 65 minutes in the middle. So assuming that your starting pack is Russell Packer, Armau, Frizzell, JDB, and Thompson, that would leave Paul Vaughan, Tariq Sims, and either Jacob Host or Luciano Leilua on the bench. Tariq should get himself about 40 or 45 minutes. Host or Leilua, let's just give them 20 minutes. And then that only leaves 45 minutes per game for Paul Vaughan, which would only be a 2-minute increase on his average from last year. So if there are injuries, I do expect Paul Vaughan to be a player worth getting, and he has a really solid PPM, and you know, a 5 to 10 minute increase may be worthwhile, but at 45 minutes per game, he's a no-go for me. And for the same reason, JDB, 65 minute is what I'm expecting out of him. He averaged 69 last year, so is there really that much upside for him? I don't think so. He did show us a little bit of an offload at the Charity Shield, but I don't know how much that's going to translate into the regular season. So, yeah, both JDB and Vaughan, I'm staying away from those two. And that's a couple of traps at the Panthers and a couple of the Dragons to look at. There's a couple more that I'm looking at a few other teams, but I think those four players, Cardi, Merrin, JDB and Vaughan, are the four that I'm sort of seeing in a lot of teams, and personally I wouldn't go anywhere near. Finally, I'd like to look at five trades that I think would be worthwhile making throughout the season, or at least throughout the first part of the season. These are trades that, barring injury, I think will definitely be worthwhile and take into advantage, particularly the buys for most of them, and which players will be playing the big buy rounds. So the first player that I'd be looking at trading in, or the one that I think is the most obvious one, will be Damien Cook in round 12. The assumption being that Farah will be playing Origin in 12, 15 and 18, the big buy rounds, which would make you assume that Cook will get 80 minutes at the hooking position. So if your cheap hooker has matured by that time, your hooker cow, I assume they would have after 11 rounds, then what might be even a downgrade of that player to Damien Cook is definitely worthwhile, I believe. Then I'll talk about the next two trades together. Getting in Gal before round 12 is going to be a smart move, assuming he's still healthy and on the field. He plays the first two big buy rounds now that he's retired from Origin. And Manu Ma'u, it will also play the big buy rounds as the Eels have those terrific buys. So looking into rounds 10, 11, 12, when you find an opportunity to get in either Gao or Mao, I would put them in my team. You probably won't have the money to bring them both in at the beginning of round 12, so perhaps look at getting one in a little bit earlier. Then there's the players or the forward guns who have helped you through the first big buy, but then are of less use to you, and that might be Simon Mannering or Bodine Thompson. Obviously, a lot of coaches will be looking at holding these players through the buy rounds, but if you do want to maximize the players on the field, then perhaps look at trading either of those two players, or even a Raiders player, if you might have one, a Whitehead or somebody like that, trading those players to Jesse Bromwich in round 13. Bromwich will play the second and third big buy round. He will have missed the round 12 as the Storm don't play, but he'll be playing rounds 15 and 18. And in round 13, the Storm play the Knights. So picking him up at that point should be the best use of your opportunity to get Jesse Bromwich into your team. And then if it doesn't work out, well, you can trade him back to someone like Merrin or Bodine after the buys. And lastly, I want to talk about the Bulldogs. So let's have a quick look at the Bulldogs draw leading up to the first big buy. We have they're playing home to the Storm, away to the Roosters, home to the Warriors, away to Manly, home to the Broncos. That's pretty difficult first five games, but then it gets quite interesting. They have Knights away in round six, the Bunnies at home, Tigers away, Canberra at home, the Cowboys at home, the Roosters at home, and then in round 12, which is the big bye, they are away to the Sharks, who will be missing a few Origin players. Now, what I think is interesting there is that whilst the first five rounds are not necessarily easy, round six onwards are as easy as you can possibly get, I think, in the 2017 comp. Knights, Bunnies, Tigers, Raiders, Cowboys. Cowboys is hard, but at least it's a home game. And then Roosters. So I would be looking at getting into my team a Bulldogs back who ideally doesn't play Origin. So if BMOZ does, if you don't think BMOZ is going to make the Origin team, then he might be a target. Or Mbai or Hopper if he's playing Sundays. Or maybe one of even the right-hand side backs, whether it's Branko Lee, Holland, whoever gets those spots. I would be looking at getting one of those players in my team for round six. So if one of my backs is not performing well through the first five rounds, or maybe you've started with a Bunnies back, the Bunnies have a very good start to the season, but not so good from about round six onwards. Then trading out that player for your BMOZ or Hopper or whoever you happen to select, I think will be very beneficial for you, and you have another player for the first buy in round 12. So that's something to think about. It's a little bit riskier, I understand, but I think it should play out well. Okay, well, it's time to go. We hope you enjoyed the podcast and you had some things to think about going into your team lists and you're setting up your team for round one. And obviously, good luck to the season for everybody. Hope everybody does well. Get in some interesting pods. It's always great to see teams that, where coaches have thought out some options for their teams rather than just going with very traditional options. So yeah, good luck to you all. And thanks for listening.